Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mac Show. I'm Jeff Gamet, your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I screwed up the title. I should have said, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mac Show Summer of Fun Edition. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. See, that time I got it. Ah, go me. All right. Anyhow, I'm here with an amazingly tolerant and patient panel today because, I mean, they're here with me, so how could they not be tolerant and patient? Or gluttons for punishment. Potato, potato. Anyhow, Dave, how are you doing?
I am doing great. Nice day off today, and what a way to spend it with you guys being here, and looking forward to talking about our stuff here today and getting caught up with you guys.
You're a glutton for punishment, right? That's why you're spending your day off with us. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, that explains so much. Yep.
I'll be doing two podcasts today, so I'm taking my day off really strong here. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. Well, another glutton for punishment. Chuck, how are you?
Yes, that's me. I'm a glutton. I'm good, Jeff. I missed you guys last week. It's good to be back.
It's great to see you. And I can say from personal experience, Chuck really is a glutton for punishment because when we're at events together, we hang out together. Chuck doesn't have to do that, and yet he does.
Hey, I enjoy seeing what you're going to do next, Jeff. It's a constant state of surprise.
For me too.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you back. And
well, appreciate it.
Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing well as well. We talked in the pre-show a little bit about the Taylor Swift concert here in Vienna, and the cancellation. I think it's gone around the world. Everybody knows about it, but yeah, I'm just happy everybody's safe. And there's a really interesting group of people right now in Vienna, which is cool. That's my type of people. No, I'm good. It's just been a very busy day. I cannot lie. I had a meeting until right after, actually a couple of minutes even after I was supposed to join here. So.
These
been a long
know
day.
Who you are?
No, I told them I have to leave at 5, but it's okay. We can do a meeting. They asked. I was like, yes, it was important that we do it today, so we did. It was a good meeting. So it was one person. It wasn't even a big meeting.
Okay, so a productive.
Oh, good. Very productive. Very good. Yeah, we had a meeting this morning with our previous CEO, and he is our founder, retired now. But still involved in a lot of day-to-day things. And there was also an interesting meeting, but that's not the meeting you want on a Friday at 9 a.m. So
yeah,
kind of, but it was good. So I'm not complaining. It was actually a good meeting.
Okay.
But those kind of board level meetings can go either way sometimes. So you don't know what you're getting into.
That is true. Well, I'm glad that you didn't walk away from it flipping tables and throwing bricks through windows.
No. Nah. I wouldn't do that. I would be like, okay, I'm out. That would be my answer, probably.
Yeah, Patrice's version of flipping tables.
Yeah.
All right, I'm out. And walk away.
Exactly. No, but it's all good. No, it's good. It was actually a good meeting. Good to see him also as well. I've worked with him over the years many times. So happy to not have to work with on that level too often. But when we do have something, it's always pleasant. So.
Okay.
Can't complain.
Nice. Well, there's so many things I could complain about, but why?
You're not in Germany.
Right, I'm not in Germany. Therefore,
you can't complain.
It's not a sport here. Yeah. Hey, I said it's summer of fun, and for those of you that are playing along at home but don't know what that means. During the summer, when news typically is slower, we, instead of just taking a break like we used to and not do shows for several weeks, Patrice came up with the absolutely brilliant idea of picking some other topic And we'll just have a random discussion and just hang out and have fun. Which, when I say it that way, it kind of sounds like what we do anyhow, but it's different.
It's different. I mean, usually we have a format and we have some like things that we do and how we do things, whatever, and some are fun, anything goes.
Right.
Like so.
And Chuck, because he is completely off the hook, absolutely out of control, came up with today's idea for discussion, which is subscription services. Why do they make sense or not? And of course, Chuck, it's you're the kind of person that would bring this idea to the table, because it's a legit discussion, but also has the potential to go completely sideways.
Thank you, I think.
It's definitely a compliment all the way around.
Well,
I'll take it as such then. Thank you.
Yeah. So, subscription services, I'm assuming, but I don't think we have to stay limited to what I'm assuming. We're talking about software, apps as subscriptions, but I suppose it could be any kind of subscription, right?
Well, Jeff, it's interesting that you pulled this out at this particular time, because I've been off for a little while, but apparently while I was gone, there was a big kerfuffle going on about Logitech possibly doing a subscription for a mouse. And now to be very clear before somebody freaks out, they're not doing it. They've taken great pains. In fact, the last thing I heard was that they weren't even sure where this whole thing came from. But bottom line is that that starts to tread in a whole different direction. And we can go that direction if anybody wants to. But you're right. Up to this point, we're all seeing subscriptions for software and services, and I guess this panel would probably limit it to software as part of the discussion.
Yeah, because I think we should limit it because there's different arguments to be made depending on what it is. I think there's different businesses and business models behind it. So I think software subscriptions is probably more the thing we are concerned about most of the time. I don't know if you're concerned about the subscription for your heated seats in your car or something.
Well, that is a whole other discussion.
Exactly. Yeah, app
Yeah.
subscription. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. It's an interesting trend because that, I mean, didn't used to have that in that sense, right? I mean, back in the day, I mean, there was shareware and whatever, but it was usually most of the time it was one-time payment, and then maybe every couple of years you would buy a new version or buy an upgrade or anything like that. Especially when you had to buy a CD or DVD or disc or tape, depending on how far back you go, or magazine to tape it off, to even get the version, get the update. So I think that was a different time, but I mean, these days, sometimes feels like everything is going subscription,
Well,
and I think
Patricia,
there are good reasons.
yeah, and Patricia, you bring up an interesting point that delivering the software now has completely changed from those old days when the publisher had to ship a CD or go farther back, a disc or something, now. And also there was one particular incident involving, I don't know if anybody remembers Adobe Go Live.
Oh yeah.
When, yeah,
I remember
when,
when it was Go Live Cyber Studio.
yep. But they had made it free to download, and all of, and so, at the time, that was borderline state-of-the-art software. And so everybody jumped on it. And then the individual who offered it for free, and it was not pirated, by the way, not absolutely not. It was completely legit, ended up with, let's just say, a substantial bandwidth bill. And so,
Yes.
that became a bit of an issue. But now, you just you don't even think about it. I open my phone and I see, okay, you have 57 new updates to your installed apps. Okay, hit go and don't even think about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a substantial bandwidth bill involved in that, but you're not seeing it. Apple is paying for it somehow.
Trying to
I mean,
point out
I always think when I think about.
none of us blinked when Chuck said, and I see I have 57 updates.
Like,
We just are
that's
like,
normal. Every
that's
time I
normal.
open the app, I have 50, 60, 70. Like, and I can do it every day, and I have 50, 60, 70. It's like,
I check every day and yeah, it's
yeah, it's
ridiculous.
just normal. Yeah,
And I'm
I
sorry,
mean,
Patrice, I
it's
interrupted you.
no, that's fine. It was a really good point. It's like the bandwidth is. I think about that every time when we like right now in this cycle we're in where all the betas are coming out and they're quite, I mean, if you look at it, they're really big and like the new versions are coming out and there will be big updates. And I always think about how much data is flowing just that OS update and the billion of devices that get it, how much data that is in a couple of days. Like it's crazy. It's like 7, 8 gigs per device per like on and then let's say within a week. Because everybody seems to update within like week two, maybe three. We see that in statistics. Like that's a ridiculous amount of data. And especially with the beta cycle right now, that's less people because it's not like it's not the not everybody is getting it yet. But there's every 2 weeks a new version, and sometimes they are also a couple of gigabytes big. So as I said, it adds up, and Apple pays for that. They pay for the CDN, they pay for the bandwidth, they do pay for it, but it's so cheap that it's still worth it for Apple.
Excuse me. I'm assuming it's still significantly cheaper than pressing CDs or DVDs
Oh,
and making
it's
packaging and shipping the
cheaper, easier.
packaging and
Oh my God,
if something is wrong,
if something is wrong with the update, they can pull it at any point. Like try doing that with a DVD you've shipped out. All you can do is send another message and say, "Hey, please don't use this DVD," and I hope that people actually see it. That's the best you can do.
Or ship out stickers that retailers have to put on the boxes
Oh
that
yes.
say, download the update.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. No, that's exactly it.
Well, and to sorry if I'm going to alienate any U.S. Postal Service listeners, but the rate of successful deliveries, on-time deliveries, has really become terrifying. And so, and I've, in fact, just this last week, I heard a couple stories about things that, were received literally months later. And so, you start to wonder why does anybody lick a postage stamp anymore? If unless you just absolutely have to. So,
But people
but
still do.
yeah, but to stay with the topic here, I mean that those are all factors that have changed for developers and their ability to deliver rapid updates as well. And don't forget about the need to deliver rapid updates, not just for bug fixes, but for security purposes.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a two kind of two-pronged or two-sided part of that story. One is what you said, the security updates. The in general providing value over time and not waiting for the Big Bang updates anymore. But that's the other part is that software has become more and more complex. And Apple ran into that a couple of years ago where they were completely failing at doing beta releases and so on. And failing, I mean, in the sense of that they were broken and they broke everything and so on. And they were just too complex, too many changes at once. So nothing was working. And now we have the kind of yearly release cycle. And you see that in software a lot, that nowadays, I mean, Brett Terpstra will push out new changes all the time because he has the subscription revenue and it's easier to do that. Like do smaller updates when like do a feature, push it out, do a feature, push it out. Instead of having the big bang where it's like, oh, I'm selling version 2 And now it has these 10,000 features that I've built, and all of them have to work, and all of them are new, and I don't know if they all work properly together, but I've spent months trying testing it, and I still don't know, because it's just too many things that happen at once. And Adobe ran into that. Adobe is not doing it. Like, basically, that's the other aspect of it, that's just software has become more and more complex. I see it every day. I
But I
don't.
feel like that also factors into this discussion that, you want the latest and greatest, and you need those bug fixes. And because we're so dependent on our tools now, they need to be kept up to date. And the only way a developer can do that to keep a cash flow going, just like anybody that works for anyone else, you're paid on a probably on a biweekly basis.
Or
So
monthly if you're in Europe.
or monthly if you're in Europe. And so, but at the end of the day, you count on that cash flow coming in to pay your bills. And for the developer who says, I sell it once, and then I don't get anything for 6 months, a year, 2 years, unless until I either do a major update or a major revision change. Well, that's, I mean, yeah, that's really tough. In some ways, if you look back, it's kind of amazing that anybody was able to live like that.
Yeah, I mean, think about the fact that shareware, the word shareware, that was always the big buzz in the 80s and the 90s. And do you ever hear? I hardly ever hear about shareware anymore. I mean,
Yeah,
because
it does exist still,
it exists, but it's, I
but
don't
it's
think
rare.
it isn't a good model anymore. Because I mean, at first I was very resistant to su subscriptions for software, but I come to realize, to get them to be much better at developments and things like that, developing, keeping the application fresh, and then coming up with new applications.
But
I'll, you'll,
it depends, right? Because it depends on what is the application. There's apps where you need the security updates, you need the new features, you want it to continue. I don't know, social media app or something. But there's other apps, like, or I would say sometimes in the productivity category, where I think maybe we don't need that all the time. Maybe it is fine if it works now and there is nothing to add to it. It works, it does the job. There's no significant bugs. Maybe shareware or one-time payment is totally fine, and like, that's it. If there is not a significant push for the, like, on the developer side to change it, to add to it, to like keep working at it, they basically built it, and yeah, some market module here and there, maybe a bug fix, but that's it. Then that might be fine to just do shareware or a one-time payment and say, okay, it's done. Like, it's also okay. Like, I wouldn't say it's dead. It just depends really on the app. Like, I'm
Yeah, it
just
does.
thinking, like, there's the audio editor that I use for the podcast, Reaper. That's a one-time payment. I don't expect any extra features. It does exactly what I need. It works. It's not the most beautiful app. It's probably a couple of years old from the UI perspective. Actually, probably more like 10. Feels like, but I don't care. It gets the job done. It does exactly what I need. I understand it. It works. And as long as that keeps going, yeah, they might have to invest a little bit in new OS versions and so on. Maybe they will, like, ask for some extra money or have some, like, a new version at some point to do that. I'm okay with that. Like, Parallels does that all the time. Actually, they have switched to subscription, but they used to do that. Every year there would be a new release of Parallels, new payment. You could
Oh yeah,
upgrade, but that was
I do
basically
that.
their thing. Yeah, and if you stayed on the OS version that you had because it works, then you didn't have to pay for it. It works, it runs, it's fine, no need to change. And that's okay.
I was a little different with Parallels only because I like Parallels a lot and I want to continue to see how they evolve. So, and then we're geeks here and want to do that stuff. So
Of course.
I subscribe to Parallels and I upgrade every year. I've probably had every version of Parallels since going back to version 5. I mean, it's crazy how long I've been doing that. But I was going to give a comparison. Like Rogue Amoeba is a good example of software. A lot of times they have amazing applications that as we all know, that you buy it once and you could go a couple of years before you have to actually pay for an upgrade. I mean, they don't do it very often, which is their model seems to work pretty well, and they're attracting more people. Even like Audio Hijack and Loopback and a lot of their applications. Go on the other side of the spectrum, Adobe. Adobe is notorious with the ungodly high prices for their subscriptions to Creative Cloud. And I understand the product is high end, the product is very out in that niche market, but it's not affordable for your small time person who wants to be creative. It's a lot of times,
It's more
but lots of
affordable now. That's the thing with Adobe. I mean, they're a very professional tool. They used to cost, I don't remember, $1,000 a year or something, or 2 year, every 2 years. Like not everybody would update every year, but let's say you did it every year. That was like $1,000 or $1,500. I don't remember, depending on how big the suite was you
Yeah,
bought.
it was a lot of money.
That was not
It's a lot.
affordable for anybody, for like anybody other than business. So if you're in a business where you need that, okay, and if your business is also big enough, it's not really a small business where you're just like it's not affordable even for that,
No.
you paid that, but nobody else could. With the monthly payments, it's a little bit easier because you're basically
Yeah.
paying a little bit every time.
And you
So
and
it's
if you
actually more
decide you want to
affordable
stop for a
now.
while, you can stop and then you can go back.
Yes.
But to
Yeah.
going back to big companies, I mean, I see an experience right away. You can be the large, really large company, but even large companies are scrutinizing that cost too. I mean, they're on average, if you want a full, you want the full Creative Cloud suite, it's like still $700, $800 per person per year.
But that's because the big company is looking at it from a, okay, what does it cost me in my budget in this year? And is that like, does that make sense for what I get out of it? So that's a different scrutiny and it's a different level of looking at. They're not buying it just because they like it.
But
Right,
Patrice,
no.
to restate kind of what you said in a little bit from a little bit different angle, and somebody sit down because I'm going to defend Adobe here a little bit. The Adobe
Go for it.
produces professional level tools,
Right.
okay,
Yes.
and that's something that we've all struggled with because we all want to believe, well, I'm a professional, or at worst, I'm a semi-professional. The fact
Yes.
is, we're not. Okay. And fortunately, there are plenty of great options out there that
Yes.
can do up to 85, 90%, maybe even a little higher percentage of what the Adobe products can do. But, you
Exactly.
know, and but people use Adobe products to make money. They don't just do the little stuff. They do it to make money. And that's a differentiation.
I'm gonna quote Doc Rock here. He said, like, the Adobe suite is simply priced into my rate.
Yes,
Like
exactly.
I have a couple
Because
of
he's a
jobs and it's paid
professional. He's in
for.
a
He is a
professional.
professional. He uses it professionally. It's not a reason, he's not even thinking about that. It is the right tool for his job and it's just priced in, done.
But okay, so I want to take that and jump to another category that I think it is the way I evaluate things because I'm not a professional, so I don't need the Adobe Creative Suite. Are there things in there I would love to play with? Absolutely. There are even a couple of things that I haven't found a good replacement for. So, but it's not, you know, I'm doing that cost benefit thing. Now,
Same.
let's go to the fact that those professionals use that software a healthy percentage of their working day. That's kind of the way that I personally evaluate subscriptions. That if I have something that is I use on a regular basis, and frankly, my favorite example of this is Text Expander. I don't use it a couple times a week or a day. I use it a few times an hour. That is well worth the subscription to not only keep it secure, but most importantly, to keep it updated, to have the bug fixes so that when I go to expand a snippet, that I know it's going to work. And so,
And
you know, when
that's true.
yeah, well, you gotta look at that. You know, how frequently do you use it? As to, you know, and then start trying to do the math. And is it worth 20 cents a day or a buck? Is it worth a buck a day?
That's you're absolutely right. Like we were talking about Adobe, from my perspective, the best audio editor for podcasts that I have ever used is Adobe Audition. I do not own it. I do not use it. Why? I'm not doing it enough. If I was doing it all the time, if I had a bunch of podcasts I was constantly editing, I would gladly pay the subscription fee for it. But I don't need it, so I found a different solution that works, and that's cheaper, simply, but gets the job done. It's not as fancy, it's not as nice, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles I would maybe want to, but it gets the job done. So that's the difference. You're absolutely right. And you have to evaluate that. Text Expander is a good example. I am not paying for it because I just realized I'm not using it a lot. And there's a free alternative that I'm using that works reasonably well for the things I need. If I ever got to the point where that wasn't going the way I wanted and it was like I was using it more and it's just not there, then I would switch to Text Expander again. Like, not a problem, but you have to evaluate it. I also want to talk a little bit about the opposite side. Like, why do companies decide to go subscription? Because it's always like people are complaining about it. It's like, oh, they're greedy and they want all my money and I can't pay for a million subscriptions. And yes, that
And now
sometimes
I
maybe
can't
is
have
true.
all the apps that I want because I have to
Yes.
budget my subscriptions and
Yeah, and that might be true in some cases. Yes. Some companies do it because they can make more money that way and they just want more. That does exist. Sometimes they might overcharge for the thing. Like they say, oh, our app is worth $10. That's their choice. Even if you say, for me, it's only worth one a month. That's what you basically what you said, Jack. Like you have to evaluate how much are you willing to pay for it, basically. How much is it worth to you? So
But
overcharging more in a sense from the person who then gets charged. Like the company might be totally worth $10 a month and features and whatever, but what you are using is only one. Then your
that's
decision.
why I stopped using Creative Cloud.
Yeah.
I mean, I was using Photoshop all the time, Illustrator, a lot, InDesign a little bit less. But I realized for the types of tasks that I was doing and how often I needed to do things, the cost benefit didn't fit. So I ended up switching to the Affinity Suite, and the cost benefit fits for me there. But it also addressed or it made clear to me that there's another issue that people need to look at with software like this. There's all these features you want. Okay, great. Are those the features you're using? And what I found is that when I switched to Affinity Photo instead of Photoshop, I'm like, well, man, there's this tool and this tool and this tool, and I'm not going to have them. And as I was working, I realized, well, for all of them except one, it didn't matter because I wasn't actually using those tools anyhow.
Yes. Yeah, or you're using them, whatever, once a year for like one thing, one time, just because you have it and you could, but if you didn't have it, it wouldn't matter. You would just not do that. Yeah. I mean that's the same argument as like I have to buy the biggest car I can find because once a year I take a road trip somewhere, or once every 5 years I take a road trip somewhere. It's like maybe then you don't need a big car. Just rent a big car when you need it. Don't have to drive a truck around just because every 5 years you move.
So let's bifurcate this discussion into two areas. We have the user area and we have the developer area. And you know the perspectives, and Patrice, you just brought it up. Why do companies do this? Some of them, yes, they want to try to maximize, no, scratch that. Everybody wants to try to maximize the revenue. You can't blame them for that because
Not
we do the
everybody.
same
There's
thing.
companies who are genuinely not super interested in that. As long as it's okay and they make enough money, they're fine. Like, not
Okay.
always about the revenue.
Okay.
There's
I'll go with
companies
that.
like that.
I'll go with that.
Small usually, but they do exist.
Yeah, but you know, they are looking for that, like we started out the conversation. They're looking for that constant or relatively predictable revenue stream. Now, it's entirely possible that something could go haywire and everybody says, "Oh my God, you know, this app is now terrible and we're unsubscribing." And
Yeah, that
so,
can
you know,
happen. It's a
but
risk.
yeah, but the likelihood is that they are going to have that income on a pretty regular basis. So that's a simple reason as to why. I mean, if I were a developer, I'd be looking at that if it were my sole source of income, instead of trying to wait 6 weeks, 6 months, a year, 2 years to get another hit to my bank account.
I can add a little bit more to that because there's kind of let's say two models for that. If you're on the like the one-time payment plan, app, with your app or with your service, then what you need is you might need the every couple of years upgrade or whatever the time frame is, and you have to make sure so that you have constantly money. You have to make sure that you're constantly acquiring new customers or customers are coming back. I mean, sometimes you have churn and then they come back and pay again after a couple of years or something. So basically, but in order to have, let's say, a somewhat reliable flow of money over time, you need to basically acquire new customers all the time. And of course, we can imagine that that doesn't work infinitely, because at some point you have reached whoever you can reach in your target audience. And then either you, what you can do is expand and open up new opportunities for new audiences that you could address, or you have to simply, you don't get the money anymore until you do an upgrade or whatever. This is the one model, and that works for some, as we just addressed. But it, as you said, it has the downside. You have to basically constantly look at how can I get more users? How can I attract more users? What can I maybe add that would attract more users to my platform? How can I advertise to get more users on it or whatever? You're basically constantly looking for the new one, and the old people that they already pay, people who already paid are kind of not super important to you. At least not as important as finding new ones, because the new ones is where you get the money for the next paycheck. Kind of. Or for the next version that you're building. I can see it this way as well. Like the next version I want to build, the next big release, I need to basically upfront invest money to build it, and then I can later get it back. So you need to have that money. So that is a challenge. So, and you see that sometimes where companies simply ignore the existing customer base because they say, well, they've already paid, so I don't care. Good companies don't do that because they know that those customers, one, will advertise for you and they will come back. And later on, you might need them for an upgrade that you want to have them pay for it and what an extra service and whatever. There's good million reasons to do that. But some companies just ignore it and say, don't care. You paid. Done. Here's the app. Good luck. Don't call me for anything, basically. That's the one side. The subscription side is up, is the difference, because you basically you like the acquisition of an individual customer is important, but you also want to keep them long term. So you're looking more, how can I keep the sure, how can I get more customers on board? Because that's good, because you're opening up new streams that can come in and more money that come in can come in a constant basis. And maybe some you have some churn, so people leave and you have to supplement that again so that you're basically keeping it even. But you also have to make sure that the customers you have are happy. That they get the features they want, that they get the support they want, that the stuff keeps working and so on, which is a different challenge. Because now you have to make sure that what you're doing is always good and always works and always brings the value. And as you said, something might change and then they're leaving. Everybody's like, oh, this is a terrible company. It broke in the new OS version and now I'm unsubscribing. Then you have no money.
Then you have no money.
Yeah,
All right,
so it's a different problem.
never a good thing.
The three of you have been doing such an amazing job of having this great conversation that I've been able to sit here and for the most part just watch and soak it in, which is pretty awesome. And I appreciate that. But it also gave me time to sit here and start really thinking about all the software that I'm running across all my devices, which was the impetus for a question. Just generally, how much of the software that you're using is subscription versus perpetual license? And I'm thinking that for me, just in general, I'm probably using more apps, but not by much, that are perpetual license than are subscription. But the percentage of the subscription apps that I'm using is much higher on my mobile devices than it is on my Mac.
Yeah,
Wow,
because on
that's
mobile, it
interesting.
barely ever existed. I mean, it was a very brief amount of time where that was a thing, and then subscriptions happened, and since then we've not had anything like that, basically. I have to think about that. I think for the most part, I'm more on the subscription level. I mean, thanks to setup as well.
I was going to say
Oh,
setup.
right. Setup.
Kind
I
of that's a
forgot about
big,
that.
that's
Yeah,
a, that's, I
that
think, a big
changes
reason.
for me.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think in general, because I have done development, I've sold apps, I've worked even on private and I never published apps sometimes. And I work professionally in apps, and I know how important subscriptions are for developers. On the other hand, I go to open source. That's neither. That's the third option. I just go to open source alternatives a lot of times. Like if it's not worth the subscription or I don't like the options that I have, I'll just go open source.
Jeff, without doing an audit, I would have to. I would want to do an audit to answer your question accurately. I tend to think of some of my
Look at
most
that.
some,
Someone
yeah.
working in insurances wants to do an audit.
Well, yeah, for accuracy's sake, but I tend to think of some of my most important apps as being subscription-based, again, for the security and the
Yes.
reliability angles. But I want to take Jeff, I want to take you on the setup tour or the setup discussion, because this to me is really important. And it's something that I find annoying about a lot of apps that I might subscribe to. Setapp does such a great job because I'm subscribing to a bunch, frankly, I'm subscribing to a bunch of apps I don't need. I'm subscribing to a bunch of apps I do need or want. And Jeff, you and I did a discussion way back when Setapp was first coming out with the CEO of Setapp. And if memory serves, one of the concerns we had was how do developers get paid? And as I recall, the answer was that the
Yes,
usage
right.
of the apps is how the
Yes.
money got divided.
Yes.
Okay, so assuming that still holds true, and Patrice, you're saying yes, Jeff's saying yes,
Yeah, that's still true.
I kind of
Yes.
think so. Okay, so the idea that we still haven't seen, does anybody remember micropayments? You know, the idea
Yes.
of so why don't we see more developers engaging in micropayments and saying for a buck or two every a year, you know, you can have this app. I would
Oh
subscribe
no,
by br I would
that does
subscribe.
exist.
Well, it does exist, but not a lot, Patrice, and not for
No.
quality apps. I mean, I would subscribe my brains out to suit to a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
But when I start seeing $5 a month, $10 a month, then I look at it and say, gee, is this worth $60 to $120 a year? Is it worth 12 to 24? Yeah, maybe, probably. You know, so I'm afraid that there's a little bit of a money grab going on as part of the trend. And I would encourage developers out there, and look, if you're a developer and I'm offending you, I apologize, because you think your app is worth it, and maybe it is. Only you know what your users are saying.
There is a
The
bunch
difference
of
between what an app is worth based on everything that went into create it, but so difference between that and the perceived value of the app from the customer.
So I can tell you something. There is apps that already do that. I was just thinking about a couple. So CallSheet, for example, is $9 a year. I'm just looking at my subscription list. Infuse Pro, for example, is $10 a year. There's like I have one Mimir, for example, I think it was like $2.99 or $3 a year. There is apps like that. The problem with that is from the developer perspective, you can honestly only do that if it's a side business for you. Because if it's your full-time thing, and the reason for it is not, oh, you need the money to afford your life for that. Yes, that's part of it. The reason for it is for apps are freaking expensive to build. People underestimate it. It's like, oh, it is just an app. I hear that all day because I work in software development. I hear that all day from a lot of people who are like, oh, this is easy to build. Yeah, sure. Like, oh, why does it take X hours to do this? Like, this should be like switching out this translation should be easy, right? Because they have no clue what goes into that. They
Oh
do
my God,
not know
switching out
why does it take,
translations.
yeah, why does it take 6, 7 hours to do that? Yeah, because it's not literally just just switching out the string. There's more to that at the end of the day. And they don't understand that. And this is the same with development. Development, I mean, I've developed apps and there are like hundreds and thousands of hours that I've invested in it. A good app probably is even more than that. And if you break that down and you say you want to like have even a reasonable or even cheap, like if you value your time even like very low and say whatever, it's like minimum labor, $7 an hour, $7.25. Even that adds up if you think about it. And then you look at and say, okay, if someone pays whatever, $2 a year, you have whatever, 100 or 1,000 users who even want to use it because maybe it's a niche app. I mean, on my apps that I've sold, I did the math and I think I made like 20 cents an hour. So that was fine for me because it was never, for me, the money was never the thing. And I knew the market was small and I built it for myself and then just sold it to a few people who want it. So I didn't care. But if you want to do that as a business, then the cost is $2-3 is not enough for that.
And I would agree completely, and I understand completely, but I think that everybody, both on the consumer side and on the developer side, have to evaluate. You know, is it better to have a whole lot of little subscriptions or just a few? Mm-hmm. And again, the developer they know their audience. I don't. But I look at it and it's time. There are things that I've looked at and especially on the iPhone that I download and say, this is interesting, but it's not worth $4 a month to me, $3 a month to me.
Yeah.
And so,
that's where subscriptions like ThedApp are great, because that's literally, in my opinion, the only way how that can work. Because you spend a reasonable amount of money to get access to like a limited number of apps. You will never use all of them. And every developer gets a little bit depending on how you use it, because there might be apps that you use once, twice, three times, and then you don't need them for half a year. So for sure, it's not worth spending $50 or $100 for that if you're using them twice a year. But for the two times a year, they get their share of the subscription. And if that's the only app that they use in a month, they get even the full amount or whatever. Like if you literally don't use any other app but that app you use, then they get the full amount, or they get some fraction of that, basically, if you're using other apps. So I think that's where ThedApp is actually good, because that kind of solved that problem.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. I think ThedApp is a micropayments model with a twist. Yeah. You know, we're in Olympics week, so with a twist and a flip, it's a micropayments model, and it works well. And and another reason it works well is ThedApp curates what it goes on. It just doesn't accept anything.
Yeah.
So the odds are that you are going to, I'm always amazed at how many ThedApp apps I'm using.
Yes.
And I'm delighted because I know that I'm supporting those developers.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, some apps have switched off of ThedApp because it's at a certain point, at a certain scale, it is not working for you as a developer, because you can make more money if you are not in there, because you don't have to, because people are willing to pay maybe more than the $10 or $15 a month for the service, and they don't have to share it. So if they charge you $15 a month or even $10 a month, but they don't have to share it, it's more to them. And if enough people are willing to do that, it's not worth it being in ThedApp. And some have switched off and I think are doing quite well. So. And others have said, I don't care. People can subscribe here. People can subscribe there. It's their decision. Like, we get some money, it's fine. It's whatever it is from ThedApp is good enough. We're okay with it. So
we have a question in our chat.
Nice.
Yeah. Hopeful Disk. Any thoughts about free and open source software?
A lot of thoughts, because I do a lot of open source myself. I use a lot, and I also create a lot myself and I contribute to it. I think it's, my experience is mixed in one way, because I think I don't want to say for professional use it doesn't work, because there's there's a bunch of really good professional apps as well, but it is harder to, as a developer, I've done that. Like, it's harder to build a and maintain long-term a professional app open source. It's not impossible, but it requires a really, really, really good and strong community, because open source is a community effort. If it's a single person and they're doing it in their spare time on the side, they will burn out, because it's a side job for them. It's always gonna be a side job for them. Unless someone else pays them to do the open source work, which does happen. There is some foundations that do that, that pay people to literally maintain the things
Sure.
so that they can
WordPress
focus on it.
is a good
WordPress,
example of that.
yeah. Mastodon actually, for example, as well now. There's some foundations that support that. There's a bunch of really good things where that does happen, but it's not the norm. It's simply because of it requires a good, strong community and a lot of contributors to build a really good app, usually. The single one, as I said, will probably not work long term. See that all the time. For bigger applications, simple libraries or whatever, that's fine. I've maintained a library, open source library, for 10 years. It's not a problem, because it's like whatever, half an hour every couple months. Like, fine, works. Every now and then Apple changes something, I have to update it. That's it. So that's okay, but for bigger apps, it's hard. But it has an important place, I think, in the Apple and in the general in the ecosystem, because there are really good apps, open source apps, like the Espanso, for example, for text expander replacements. Probably is for sure not on the same level as text expander. 100% not. It's more fiddly. It's not as reliable, all of that. If you need something reliable, if you don't want to fiddle with it, if that's not your thing, just use Text Expander or one of the other options. There's others. But it has value. It's sometimes, what was it? Instead of Alfred, not Alfred, Bartender, use ICE.
Yeah, I switched from bartender to ice.
Yeah,
Yeah,
me
so did
too.
I.
And I'm happy with it. So it has its place. It is, you just have to keep in mind, this is done for free by people in their spare time. So think about how you could still, it's don't just do it because it's cheap and doesn't cost you anything. Sometimes figure out ways to support it, whether it's by money or by community support. I don't know, helping people with questions, fixing bugs if you are kind of development. Sometimes it's just, hey, there's questions in the issue tracker, and if you can just keep the questions in the issue tracker at bay, so the people who are developing it don't have to deal with it. Sometimes that's enough, or provide a translation or whatever you can, like whatever skill you have, and you can contribute an icon that's better than what they have, stuff like that. Keep that in mind. They live off a lot of people spending a little bit of time on it. And it's freaking hard, because I've been doing it for years, decades at this point.
And hopeful this asks about free and open source software. And Patrice,
Mm-hmm.
just what I guess, where is the line? If I'm an individual developer and I've released something for free, great. I
Yes.
mean,
Yeah,
that
I've
may
done that.
be, yeah, that may be something that I want to do to support the community. It may just be an ego boost for me to see that a lot of people are getting something out of my app. So
Or it can be
there
a
are a lot of,
promotional tool so that
yeah.
people are aware that you make software products.
Amen.
It can
Amen.
be. Or it can be someone like me who's like, I had fun building this. I didn't want to just build it and then forget about it. I think others could benefit from it, but I do not want to run a company. Been there, done that. I hate doing it. So I will, like, even if like sole proprietorship, self-employed, whatever, I do not want to deal with all the taxes and whatever. I literally just want to write apps. So
Yeah.
put it out there for free. Use it, no expectations. Use it as it is. Like, don't come to me with support or anything like that. Also fine. You can do that.
Okay, but also being the paranoid person that I am, if you're looking at free software, make sure that you do just a little bit of research, because
Oh, yes.
you know the old story, if you're
Yes.
not paying for it, you are the product. So make sure that somebody is not.
Yeah.
Not just your email address or your public private information, but there have been apps that have been known to be out there, and maybe they're doing a little bit of Bitcoin mining in the background
Yeah,
using your computer.
malware, all of that.
Yeah.
Yes,
Yeah.
there's a
So
risk. Yes.
Yeah, you gotta go in with your eyes wide open to this, which is one reason that, I've gotten to the point now that unless I'm really familiar with the developer or they have been around the community, a piece of software has been around the community for a while, I would prefer to pay what either subscription or just one time payment. I'd rather do that than, play with some of the open source stuff. And that again, there's plenty of open source stuff out there that is very reputable, and it would have been discovered long ago if anything was wrong with it or dangerous about it. But do just a little bit of research before you just think, oh boy, that's great. That stock
This
tracking
app.
app, yeah, that stock tracking app will solve all my investing problems because you don't
That
know who's
free
getting
stock
credit
tracking
card
app from a comp.
app.
The banking app from the company that has didn't or like or it's on GitHub and it has zero people contributing it and like well yeah that's gonna be great for sure. No, for sure. That it's here. You have to manage your expectation. You have to know what you're expecting. As you said, you're not paying for it, so do not expect support. Do not expect updates frequently. Do not expect anything of it. If that is fine for you, or if you, as I said, open source, especially, you can contribute yourself. If it's free, I don't know, maybe you can help out some other way. Sometimes that's okay, but you should. It's on you then to make the decision, and it's on you to do your due diligence because no expectations. Simply, the free means it's free. You cannot expect anything from them. They might steal all your data if you're not careful.
Well, and to take it back to using WordPress as an example, free can also mean someone else is paying for it for you. And that's basically what's
Can be
happening
fine.
with the WordPress Foundation. All these other companies are paying their employees to contribute to WordPress Core. And then, of course, there are people that volunteer their time as well. But someone is paying so that we can have that software for free.
I mean, I would say the internet would not exist and would not work the way it does today without that. Because basically, I think every big company out there relies to some extent on open source. That either someone volunteered or someone else paid for it. Linux, OpenSSL, there's a million. I mean, I know it from what our company, what we're using. We're using basically all open source tools. There's a couple things that we pay for, but it's limited. This is how the world works today. So just because it is free, just because it is open source, does not mean it's bad. But you, as a user or as a company who's using it, have to do your due diligence and figure out if it's safe, figure out if that's long term a good strategy for you to do that, and maybe other ways to also pay for it or contribute to it or keep it going. Which is what happens with WordPress. Like there's other companies who are saying, yes, I want to be this to be around and I'm paying for it so that others can also use it. That's how that happens. So yeah, I'm a big fan of open source. I'm a big fan of free software, like in general, because I think it's a great way also for some people to like let their creativity, like let their creative juices flow and do things that they like me that they enjoy doing. Like it's as I said, the internet basically relies on that. But you as a user have to know what you're getting into. And
Hey,
sometimes it's better like Chuck, pay for it.
I'm doing it as a podcaster. I'm not charging anything, and
Yeah, it's true. We are.
a lot of us are, so same kind of same place.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's always important if you are in a position where you can spend some money on it, think about that. Even with free open source, with podcasts, with a lot of the other things, there's like all over our life, there is things like that where you can contribute to, where you can volunteer, where you can help out, like, and where you could pay for something, or I don't know, pay for someone to go to a conference for like open source conference of some sort. Say, hey, I like your tool and I'll pay for your ticket. Here's whatever, $250. If you can't do that, why not do that? And this way is also sometimes it's not you're paying for the software, but you're not paying for the software directly. You're paying for the people who are building the software for you for free to have still fun at it and be better at it and all of that.
And you're giving back to the community,
Yes.
much like TSO Host does.
There you go.
Yeah. And how is TSO Host giving back to the community? Well, what they're doing is taking the things that they do so well, web hosting, helping people buy domain names, stuff like that. And they're saying, hey, British Tech Network, we want to support you by giving you the resources you need so that you can do what you do. And so they're giving us the bandwidth to live stream multiple shows every week. They're giving us the hosting space so that there's a place for our website to live. They're giving us the server storage we need so there's a place for all the show files to live so you can watch or listen to recordings anytime you want. And the resources to do all of this, it takes a lot. It takes more than we would be able to bring together on our own, especially since we're talking about supporting open source. It would mean that everyone that's watching or listening to the show would have to start throwing a lot of money at the show so that we could do this. But TSO Host is saying, here you go. This is what you need. So take it and run with it, which is fantastic. Without TSO Host's support, we literally would not be able to do what we do. So we really, really appreciate TSO Host. Thank you, TSO Host, for doing what you do. All right, that's an example for you. I just said it. You can go on social media and you can thank TSO Host for being here and supporting us. It only takes a
Yes.
minute and it's super easy to do. And it's a really great way to let TSO Host know that we all appreciate their generosity in supporting the
Yes.
British Tech Network. So please go do that. Only takes a minute. If by chance, though, you have come up with an amazing domain name that you just have to get, well, TSO Host does offer good pricing, so why not get it from them? You're going to get a good price. You don't have to like melt your head to make this work. They make it easy to get domain names. So why not use their service? Get that domain name in your cart. If you need web hosting, throw that in your cart. But then also add in the discount code BTN20 so that you get 20% off your order. So already good pricing, but you get a 20% discount on top of that, which is super generous. So thank you, TSO Host, for doing that as well. And Patrice, do you mind if I ask you to tell people about the amazing new live chat that we have that's in place because of your hard work?
No, it's not just because of my hard work. This is another example of open source software. This is like an open source project called Owncast, which is written by some amazing people out there that provides this live stream like solution for us. So another example of really good product out there. It was a really good question, actually. So we have the live stream, as we mentioned, the Owncast installation, and you can head over to live.britishtechnetwork.com to watch us live doing this show for free. There's no costs. Literally, point your browser to this URL, and you can see us when we're streaming, which happens every Thursday, 4 p.m. Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time. Yeah, we mixed up the days and the times. Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, which is our non-Apple tech show usually. Also doing summer fun there. We had a really cool topic yesterday where we talked about movies that we'd like to rewatch, which was super interesting. There were some really highbrow and some really cool things in there. So listen to that. We'll get to that in a
Surprising
second.
considering the group.
Yes, very surprising actually. Very, very surprising. Yeah, so and Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time, this very show. If you want to join us, and all you have to do is head over to live.britishtechnetwork.com. It looks like kind of a YouTube live stream or Twitch or whatever. There's the window with the stream. If you're in a browser, bigger browser window, iPad or whatever, phone looks slightly different, but there's a big window for the video, and then on the right-hand side is a chat where we get awesome questions like the one about open source. That's how easy that is. But if you cannot, by the way, in the chat, you can also change your name. There's a little purple thing up the top. If you want to change it, just click there, say change name, and it will remember it. So next time you join, it will have that. Or you can even do Fedi auth, it's called. So log in with your Fedi account. You get a code basically to your Fedi account, Mastodon, whatever. And then you put it in and then it knows you and you get a little check mark next to your name. So that's also pretty cool. Also all open source. So cool software. Works really well as well. So good job. And yeah, but if just in case you can't join us live, you don't want to join us live, you're listening to this in recorded form, like I missed the chat. I missed the links or whatever we put in there. There's a transcript for every chat, for every stream, for every podcast that we record, basically. And all you have to do is head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, select a date in the friendly calendar, anything. There's like June 2nd, 2015, we started doing this. And today is the 9th of August, 2024. And if you put in a date, you will see what was talked about in the chat. And the cool thing is for the live chat, it's actually like real time. So you could head over to the page over there and you will real time see if we typed something. Just have to refresh every now and then. So it's not live updating, but if you refresh the page, you will see literally the messages that were sent. So it's actually pretty cool. As I said, all open source. It's all open source tool that we're using there. There's nothing proprietary, nothing paid for. It's all open source. And I've contributed some fixes and some changes to that. So doing my thing. Yeah, so that's it.
Awesome. Patrice, thank you for explaining that. Also, thank you for all the work you put in to get our live stream and live chat modernized.
Yeah, it was probably literally like 45 minutes of work. It was not that
for
much.
You
45 minutes for me, that's true.
Yeah,
it was not that much, and most of it was changed to DNS and like that was it, and then figure out how to get the chat back into our chat thingy. That was it.
Yeah, well, it's like the old story, refrigerator stops working, and so the fridge repairman comes out, looks at it, goes, ah yeah, and kicks the refrigerator down near the bottom, near the corner. It starts working again, and he gives the person a $200 invoice. Yeah. And like, $200 to kick my refrigerator? This is ridiculous. So the repairman says, okay, I'll itemize it for you. $1 to kick the refrigerator, $199 to know where to kick.
Yes. I've literally told like people, I mentioned the translation thing earlier. I literally told those people, I'm like, okay, if you think it's that easy, I'll give you access to our repository and you can change it. Let's see how long it takes you. That was the end of the discussion, because they were like, they couldn't do that.
No, they couldn't. And you pay for someone's expertise and their experience.
Yeah, that's something I think for anybody who's done freelance work or anything, remember that. People are paying not for your time, they're paying for expertise. If it took you 10 years to learn it, then you should charge it appropriately.
Mm-hmm. I have had people complain saying that I charge way too much to write. And if I didn't have all the experience and the skill that I have, I would not charge what I charge. All right. Hey, we're out of time. So we need to wrap up. Thank you to all three of you for actually for carrying a discussion where I could basically sit here and eat popcorn through the whole show if I wanted to. So, yeah, thanks for that. Dave, where can people find you?
Like, find me at In Touch with iOS, intouchwithios.com. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/intouchwithios. We just had a great show with Kelly Gaumont and Marty Gentius, and go check that out. As well as you could find me on Mastodon at DaveG65 at mastodon.cloud. And I'm on the Mac Voices Live every Tuesday night. We'll be back finally. Been a two-week hiatus, and glad to be back there. And I'm here on Fridays usually. Thanks.
Awesome. And Chuck, how about you? Where can people find you?
MacVoices.com is where you find me talking to all sorts of interesting people, including Mac Voices Live with Dave and Jeff and occasionally Patrice when she stays up late. If we do that Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And on the socials, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. And Patrice, how about you? Where are you hiding out?
Usually hiding out here, actually, and in open source projects. No, I'm here every week on the Big Show and the Mac Show on this very network. That Thursday's Big Show, Friday's Mac Show. Right now, we're doing the Summer Fun. You can find out all the projects I'm doing, the open source projects, and like everything else I'm doing, all the podcasts, social media links, all of literally all of the above. You will not find a Twitter account there, but the Mastodon one, so open source, yay. On our website, which is also built using open source tools. I'm gonna mention that now. Thepatrice.com is the website. It's all open source. It's literally all open source. And I have a really cool podcast that we do for free. Open source, I don't know. We do for free with Jeff Gamet together. We just published another episode. It's called Retro Rewatch, where we rewatch retro shows. So a couple years, in this case, I think 26 years, 27 years old. We're rewatching it. So Jeff has never seen them. I have seen them a million times. We're rewatching Stargate SG-1. Mm-hmm. And we just published, what was it called? The First Commandment?
First Commandment.
Tenth Commandment. First Commandment. See, I can't even remember the title of the stupid episode that we...
Well, I remember
not the episode that we published.
Because I wrote the show first.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. But the stupid episode of SG-1 that we watched. So, okay. So that we just published. Cool episode with us. But we had a lot of thoughts about this one.
We did.
We're very early in season one still. So that's, yeah, you can tell. Retro Rewatch with Jeff. Pretty cool show.
I have a lot of fun doing that show with you. Yeah.
Me too.
All right. So for me, social media, I'm Jay Gamet everywhere, and I'm active on Mastodon and Instagram. And then for shows, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live on Tuesdays, Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS on Thursdays, here on the British Tech Network, Thursday for the Big Show, Friday for the Mac Show. And Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine. And as Patrice said, I am doing Retro Rewatch with her. And with that, okay, we're really going to wrap up now. Thank you to the three of you for being here. You are so awesome. And this has been so much fun. And I'm already looking forward to next week. And we haven't even gotten totally to the end of the show yet. But I'm already excited about next week. Then let's see. Hey, thank you to all of you who have been watching and listening live. So glad you were here. If you're participating in the live chat, thank you for doing that as well. Everyone that watches or listens to the shows later, thank you for being part of this too. I'm so glad all of you are part of the BTN family. And that family also includes you and Ewan. Thank you for being you. Muller, thank you for making sure we have people for shows. And Tioso Host, thank you for being here and supporting us every single week. Give them some online love and use that discount code BTN20, everyone. All right. So with that, everyone, join us next Thursday for the Big Show again, and then come back on Friday for the Mac Show. And I hope all of you have an awesome weekend.